Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts, podcast 532. In this podcast, people have been asking me, what do you think about all this stuff that's going on politically? So I'm going to tell you in podcast 532. Well, let me tell you, this was a great trip that I took just recently, going across the Upper Peninsula and down the Huron side of Michigan, all the way over to Cleveland, and then back to Oshkosh for the EAA air show. And I took a break from yoga. I did not do any yoga the whole time I was gone. I actually did a hot class in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So I had a week off, and so I had no Hydrus, except I did a couple times drink some Hydrus on those really hot days just to make sure that I stayed hydrated. So I had no Hydrus, no yoga for about a week and a half, except for that one class that I did in Ann Arbor, and came back to yoga this week and just I've had three great practices coming back to yoga this week. And of course, I'm going to take some time off again when I head out to Sturgis, although I've got some studios lined up, so I'll be practicing yoga on the trip out to Sturgis as well. But I'm amazed that I can go back to yoga after taking a week and a half or so off, and I'm someone that practices every day, go back to drinking the Hydrus before, after, and during yoga, and I am able to practice yoga at the same level that I was at before. So I'm in those crowded rooms. It's over 100 degrees. People are sitting on their mats. People are leaving the room because they are overheated and they're not hydrated. Here's the deal. I don't care what kind of exercise you do. Hydrus is going to help transform what you do, especially if you do CrossFit, if you do biking, if you do weightlifting. You're going to notice a change in the level of intensity of your workout, and you're going to notice a change in just what you can do. So let me tell you about Hydrus. Hydrus is a new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology that gets these electrolytes, critical electrolytes, into your system with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. It's very much faster than just straight water or traditional sports drinks that use sugar to get those electrolytes into your muscles. And so you get hydrated really fast. The quality of your sweat is better, and it's pretty amazing because you can take it to the edge, and the edge is where you learn, where you grow, where you get better. Join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com, HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. It takes you to the Hydrus page, and there's all kinds of information in there about people doing strongman competitions, CrossFit, and everything else. But it works for anybody, and it works for anybody at any age. It doesn't matter what you do. If you just walk, you'll notice a change if you use Hydrus, and I'll tell you more about it going forward. I love it. I think it's great, and I really enjoyed handing it out at EAA as well to some of the pilots, because the reason that they wanted pilots to try it is if you happen to be a pilot and you walk past the Alpha Systems booth at EAA, we also notice with Hydrus that there's a process of, it makes people more alert when they're hydrated. It's pretty interesting. So that's one of the reasons they wanted to get pilots to try it on this trip. Once again, Hydrus Performance, HYDRUS. I could talk about it for the whole podcast, but I'm not going to do that. HydrusPerformance.com. Well, I'm live from the front yard because I've got Mobile Podcast Command pulled up into the front yard, and I'm going to be taking it in tomorrow to get some maintenance work done, and we've got a very short window here, so I don't want to pull all of the package out of the truck because I'm going to be taking it to get some stuff done tomorrow, and then I am headed out to Sturgis for the 2016 Motorcycle Rally at Sturgis. Very excited to be going out there and seeing my friends from Ciro and just basically hanging out, hopefully stopping in Deadwood. So, Brad, if you're listening, I got to send you an email and let you know what the plan is, because I don't know yet. I'll let you know when I get there. I never really know, but the truck is pulled up in the front, driveway, and I'm sitting out here on the front lawn. I like doing podcasts from the front lawn. For one thing, I don't have wind issues because I'm in the lee of the truck, and then, of course, the wind is coming from another direction, so I'm not dealing with wind. So, yeah, people have been, and I'm not really even going to worry too much about mic technique tonight. I'm just going to sit here on the wall and talk a little bit. about the political situation. People have been sending me emails that are what I would refer to as peripheral viewers or peripheral observers of the political process. That is, they get interested in politics just, especially in election years, presidential election years, just around the time of the conventions. And I mentioned this on the radio show that a rule of thumb is that people don't start paying attention until after the conventions in presidential election years. Some people call them low information voters. You know, I've come to the point where I believe that all voters are low information voters, and I'll talk about that a little bit. But these people are asking me to tell them what I think of the political situation and who I think they should vote for and why. And it's kind of a hard question. I've alluded to my feelings in previous podcasts at various different times. I mean, if you've been listening to the Bob Davis podcast, there's probably no doubt in your mind how I feel about this process and how I feel about what we have to choose from at the present time. And I can barely conceal my disgust for the whole process from the beginning. And I'll tell you when my... I'm not going to say that I've divorced myself from the political process. I have distanced myself from the partisan political process because I find it highly distasteful and very uninformative. If you look at the Twitter feed, if you look at the Facebook feed, it's really bad. It's very bad. And the information people are getting is very bad. And the chief problem with all of it is that we're dealing with some complicated issues in the American situation in the world. We're dealing with foreign policy. We're dealing with trade issues. And so, therefore, foreign policy and trade issues. We're dealing with economic issues. We're dealing with social issues. And we're dealing with issues that demand a little bit more knowledge of the contours, as I like to call it, of those issues than most people are aware of. And it's becoming obvious to me that we're not getting any more well-informed. And I'll tell you when it started for me. It started on the campaign trail for me when I went out and I said earlier this year in February, I'm going to go out and cover these presidential candidates. And my intention was to cover some Democrat events as well as some Republican events. And it just didn't work out that I covered any Democrat events. And I feel bad about that because I'm not a Democrat. I don't agree with Democrats politically, but I felt that I should have covered some, especially a Bernie Sanders event, for obvious reasons. And I ended up covering all the Republicans. I got to an event for virtually all of the Republicans, but I never got to a Libertarian event, and I never got to a Democrat event. And after Iowa, and if you listen to the podcast that I did from Iowa, if you're really interested in what I think, you really should listen to the primary coverage, because once you cover the primaries and the way that they were treated by the media, they were covered like sports, and the political situation is still being covered like sports, and not very good coverage of sports. You could replace the names of the major political parties and the names of the candidates with the names of teams vying for the World Series crown, or whatever you want to call it, or the Final Four, and it would be the same coverage. It would look the same, it would feel the same, and it would be just as speculative about who's going to win. In fact, I would say that sports is probably a little bit more rooted in fact than politics. I became very disillusioned with the political process. I was disillusioned with it to begin with, but I really, the final nail was driven into the coffin on the when you see what the media does and what these politicians do when you're up close, when they are up close and personal and you're standing 5 feet from them and you see their supporters and you see the same people showing up to different events for different candidates and you see them waving the signs and everything else and you realize that the whole thing is about television. It's all about creating an event that will be televised. It's all about creating an event someone's going to write about. And this is what the journalists, and I use that quote, I use the term journalist lightly, and I said this in several of the podcasts. I don't really want to even repeat it, but I need to tell you, if you want to know what I think, I need to tell you why I think what I think. Their idea of journalism is to go stand outside and talk to people who are coming out of the event and ask them and get quotes from them. And if I saw it once, I saw it 100 times. This horde of reporters that turn the cameras on or stand in front of people who don't know anything because they're watching television, so they don't know anything, and asking them what they think Ted Cruz is all about or what they think John Kasich is all about or what they think is going to happen in the presidential election. And then that's filled out by a writer somewhere, whether it's New York or Washington or Los Angeles, and that serves as a newspaper article. Sometimes they go a little deeper where they will hang with the campaign for a while and it's still really the same thing, but it's just a longer period of time that they spend talking to people and maybe they have additional sources. And then you get into the people who have been around for a while and can say, you know, this is how this compares to last year and so forth. And that's what serves as the written component of political coverage, and then then you get into the stories that come out, and if you try to look at reliable sources, you'll see that almost all of the internet news services are rewritten stories from somewhere else. So what are they doing? Well, they're doing what I'm doing. They're doing what I've been doing for years, which is reading 6 or 7 newspapers or printing 200 or 300 pages of material every day from news sources and reading them and basically repackaging them. And I realized when I watch the mainstream media doing it, when I watch the non-mainstream media doing it, when I see that happening with websites that you wouldn't think that that's what they do, that's kind of when I realized that the whole thing, I don't want to say it's for show, it's just we don't have a media that's actually covering the issues. Like, for example, when it comes to immigration, how much have you actually heard about, you know, how many immigrants, where do they go, what are the actual statistics, you know, what jobs are they doing? When you hear that so-and-so is going to bring the jobs back to America, do you know which jobs, do you know why, do you know, for example, that one of the biggest problems in manufacturing, if we're going to bring manufacturing back to the United States, one of the biggest problems with manufacturing is manufacturers, even small manufacturers, simply cannot find enough CNC operators or machinists or people who are even able to be trained. You have to at least have some draftsman training to be able to be a good machinist, to understand what it is that you're doing. And then beyond that, you have to be able to operate IT and you have to understand what that does. And it's a highly skilled position and we don't have enough machinists. So if we're going to bring back all the manufacturing jobs to the United States, we're going to have immigrants to run the machines because we don't have enough of machinists. We're going to have to bring in machinists from other parts of the world on H-1B visas in order to run these machines. Then there's this whole issue about IT in manufacturing. And the only thing that I would say, and this is just an example, I'm not arguing this. I'm just saying this is an example. As the planes fly in, we're no longer at the air show, but we may as well be because we're now getting the last few planes coming in for the late evening flights, but I want to get this podcast done before it gets too late. Since I'm sitting in the front yard with the torches and everything else, but I've done a number of production podcasts just in the last few days, and I thought it'd be a good idea to just talk, as opposed to do another production podcast. But I bring up the manufacturing stuff because there was a time in this country when most of the people were employed in the business of agriculture, which is a business. You know, they were farmers. And we produced a certain amount of food. And in 1950, I think something like half of America was employed either in manufacturing, and the other half, give or take a few percentage points, was employed in agriculture because it took a lot of people to get the job done. Today, we employ only about, God, I want to say it's like 6% of the people in agriculture, and yet our agricultural output is higher than it's ever been. There was a story this week, and I can't source it, but it's out there, that it was in Bloomberg, actually, that talked about how American manufacturing is not falling apart, as some people have characterized it. In fact, manufacturing is growing, and the types of value-added products that we produce are growing. So, you know, the idea that manufacturing is not growing because we gave all of our jobs to some other country is actually not true. I bring this stuff up because these are just some arguments that are detailed that you are not going to hear in any of the media coverage of these guys. And if you're a quote-unquote low-information voter, in other words, if you've just started paying attention and you said, you know, what do you think and what should I do? My advice is there's nothing that you can do. This is a choice between the two worst possible candidates that we could possibly have chosen in this election. I don't think Donald Trump reflects anything other than the complete moral failure of the Republican establishment to find a candidate that is able to bridge the different groups of Republicans, the so-called religious right, the libertarian, and the so-called mainstream moderate Republican tents within the big tent that is the Republican Party. Donald Trump is a real estate mogul who became a real estate mogul based on subsidized or regulated real estate deals in the city of New York. He is not a conservative. He is not Ronald Reagan. And he is also a trade protectionist. And you can fill in the blank on the other stuff. Those things bear no relationship to the Republican Party that has, you know, that produced Ronald Reagan, who was a free trader and who was leaned more to the libertarian side in terms of economics and in terms of, you know, government and how government relates to the people of this country. Donald Trump is more Nixon-ish than he is Reagan-ish in the sense that he says he's going to make the government work better. He's going to make America great again. And that's exactly what President Obama said. So both guys are essentially statists from that point of view. And it's very hard for people who have become so partisanized that they're just supporting their guy, that the response is not an argument. It's not to say, well, no, here's the reason why he's not a statist, because you can't prove that he isn't. It's to say, well, do you want Hillary Clinton to be president? And then on the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton is not a reflection on any level of the Democratic voter today, for the most part. Democratic voters today believe we should do good things with the government. Democratic voters today believe we should have cradle-to-grave health care, that we should have minimum incomes, minimum wages, and that we should tax rich people to provide it. In fact, they agree more with Bernie Sanders as a whole than they do with Hillary Clinton. This is a year in which Wall Street is backing Hillary Clinton, and she carries the Democrat standard. So this is a very odd election from that respect, because, in fact, the Republican establishment is almost the same as the Democrat establishment. So we do have sort of uniparty. Is it going to be a disaster if Hillary Clinton is elected? Is it going to be a disaster if Donald Trump is elected? Well, it depends on what you consider to be a disaster, really. Really, what is amazing to me is that no one is talking about Congress. Nobody's talking about the Senate. Nobody's talking about the House and the makeup of the House and the makeup of the Senate, not in terms of political party, but in terms of orientation, in terms of how they believe that things should be governed. And what you have is a very much establishment Republican Congress, which is terrified of the Democratic Party and of the Democrat left-wing movement in this country, and will pretty much compromise with the Democrats no matter what. And you have a very thin Republican majority in the Senate, which is going to be tough for them to defend under Donald Trump. And the only reason that the establishment endorsed Trump was because they wanted to protect the Senate in particular. And they thought that a huge fight on the floor at the convention would hurt their chances to maintain the Senate. And so they made a Faustian bargain with Donald Trump in an effort to cauterize the damage dissent would have. And the Democrats have pretty much done the same thing. The establishment has thrown their support behind Hillary Clinton, who is an anathema to the people who have supported Bernie Sanders, in an effort to cauterize the dissent and present a united front. Just sit back here with my tea. So if you're in business, if you're a small business or even a medium or large business, and you are one of the muckety-mucks, one of the people that is a cog in the machine that needs to find ways to show clients how they are appreciated, or if you're a small business like me, it's me. I'm the chief cook and bottle washer, and showing your clients how much you appreciate them is very difficult. Now, I can just tell them because I'm doing the podcast. They listen to the podcast. All of you guys, I love you. Right? It's easy for me because I can just say that. But for somebody in business, it's hard to show how much you appreciate your clients. You can take them to lunch or dinner. That's something we all do, and you should do it anyway. You can arrange a fishing trip. That's one of the big things, you know, in Minnesota. You can send promotional items to them with your company name on it. And of course, the Minnesota Classic, as I've talked about many times, is this boat trip on a lake, which is kind of the default thing for people to do. And as I said many times, back in the day when your Uncle Frank and Aunt Sue were running the business, that was an easy thing to do because that's what people did when Minnesota and Minneapolis and St. Paul was a small town and everybody knew everybody. But it's different now. You got a diverse workforce. You have to do something unique and something new, and you have to do something different. Well, let me explain Brush Studio in the West End and what they do, because it's different, it's social, it's memorable. You will socialize and bond with your clients engaged in creating something unique at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park. What they do is they have an artist that guides people through a featured painting step by step. It's not paint by numbers. People actually paint these paintings, and they will take them home and hang them on the walls because they'll be amazed at what they can do. You do not have to have experience painting. It's just about fun, and clients have fun, and you have fun bonding with them and talking to them and having fun. Brush Studio events aren't about painting, as I said, but socializing and working together. Let's wait for the plane. Sorry. It's probably my friend flying over the house. So they have room for 55 people at Brush Studio, plus catering from Crave in the West End. So everybody's going to have fun. Brush Studio features over 22 brands of beer. They have an extensive wine collection. This is a fun, new, sophisticated way to break the mold and create a new bonding experience for your clients that they will never forget, and thus they will never forget you, right? So here's what you do. To check out the Brush Studio event stuff that they do, click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, the Brush Studio banner, or reach out to Brush Studio at brushstudio.net, or you can call them at 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio in the West End, where there's always plenty of parking. And I know because I go over there all the time. What do I think, and who do I think you should vote for? Well, first of all, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, and I'm not going to endorse a candidate, really any candidate. I certainly have friends running for Congress, two friends running for Congress, three friends running for Congress. I like my friends, but I wouldn't suggest to you that you vote for my friends. You vote for whoever you think you need to vote for. Same thing with the House races in Minnesota, where I live. And where you are. You need to do what you need to do to make yourself happy. And if you want to vote for Jill Stein, you're a Republican, go for it. If you want to vote for a Libertarian, go for it. If you want to vote for Trump, if you want to vote for Clinton, do whatever you got to do. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. What I am going to tell you is this. I am distancing myself from the political process. First of all, I think there is a surfeit of political talk and commentary and not much real information. So when I have some real information to impart, I will do a podcast about the real information. Or when I have something that I want to say, I will do a podcast, as I am right now, about that specifically. Otherwise, I'm going to start, and as I have, try to do podcasts about things that are going on in this country that have nothing to do with politics, like Sturgis and the air show. And I don't think I'm going to get tickets to Burning Man, but eventually it will be Burning Man. But if I don't go to Burning Man, I'm going to go to Agora Fest, my crazy anarchist friends, and I'm going to start hitting up some of these musical fests in an effort to reach out to the part of America that is not politicized, my brother, because there's a whole part of this country of human beings who are doing things and working together, who are Republican and Democrat, left and right, who are not thinking about that stuff. They're pouring concrete, or they are working on their house, or they are going to Sturgis, or they are going to the air show. And there is a part of America that is optimistic, and there is a part of America that is going to persevere regardless of what happens in November, this November, or maybe even November 4 years from now, certainly November 2 years from now. There is a whole portion of America which goes on completely ignoring the government. And I believe that as we continue down the road, you will see more and more Americans basically ignore the government. Because we are asking the government to do too many things, and the government is incompetent. Our government is incompetent. We are on the cusp of a great age in which the tools that we have at our disposal will only get more powerful, whether you want to say it's AI, whether you want to say it's robotics, IT, digital media, digital communications, and everything else. We are on the edge of a great age. I've talked about it. I've done podcasts about it. It's very hard to get that through people's heads. They don't realize the extent to which we have moved forward in time, and they don't understand the extent to which we have built up this technology revolution in this country. I see it whenever I go to Sturgis, whenever I go to the air shows, whenever I, look into technology or talk to people in the manufacturing business or the technology businesses. I see it, and it is only going to gather steam. And as it does, it's going to bring into being a new world. And there are a lot of people resisting it. There's, at the most basic level, there are people not in America, but people in other parts of the world who are resisting this new world because they're terrified of it. And then there are people here as well that are resisting it. And they're not necessarily aligned with a certain political point of view. There are leftists who are resisting it because they're terrified of it. They don't know how to control it. They don't know how it can be regulated. Hint, it can't. They don't know how we're going to function. And there's a lot of people who are going to be disenfranchised by these technological changes because they don't know how to use the tools that they've been given. There's a lot of people who are in their 60s and 70s who are done with their working years, and they just don't understand it. And they are upset about things that made sense in 1950 but don't make sense in the year 2016 or 2017, or really, when you look at it, we're on the cusp of the year 2025, but we're on the cusp of the year 2017. So we're moving forward in time very, very quickly. And I think people really struggle with the reality that some of these technologies enable, and they don't know what to do about it. So, and I don't think our political process is working. I remember people saying our political process is broken. I hate to say it's broken. People are still voting. Votes are still being tallied. It's just the way that it's being reported on and the way the mainline parties are functioning in order to work. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think there's going to be an event. Some people call it the singularity. Some people call it the event. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't mean that. I think there's going to be an event. I think there's going to be a culmination. I think this is all leading to something which will appear to be unexpected, but it isn't. If you are watching and if you're paying attention to the markets and if you're paying attention to new technologies and if you're paying attention to people, then you know it's coming. And I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it's the event. I don't think it's the planet Nibiru or whatever it is, Nibiru or whatever that thing is out the planet X. I don't think it's the aliens that live in the hollow earth. I don't think it's any of that stuff. I think it's just we're moving down the road towards something, and I think there's going to be a clarifying event, for lack of a better term, that is going to spin everything around. And I think this election is going to produce yet another interim leader. We will have had now three or four interim leaders and several interim congresses, if you will, who have merely just been placeholders because nobody really knows what to do. And I talked about this in other podcasts where we've had other times in our history when we have had these placeholder presidents and placeholder congresses, or the government just simply fails to do its job. Now, keep in mind, we are living in a time when we expect the government to do more than we ever expected before, and yet it seems unable to really rise to the challenge, particularly of the economy. I read a piece today that said that Barack Obama is the first president in history that has not been able to break the 3% economic growth per year barrier. He has had less than 3% economic growth his entire presidency, which, if you consider the inflation rate, is basically zero growth. And we can argue, and people will argue, well, he's had a tremendous, the economy is growing. You know, they've changed how they calculate unemployment so that it looks like 4.7% of the people that are, it's really a much higher number than that. And of course, they did the same thing during the Bush administration, too, in order to make the numbers look better. So the government's real good at covering its ass, but it's not real good at solving problems. Problems are going forward. So when I say a clarifying event, it's a big enough event that the people wake up and force the issue. And I don't think people are awake. I think people are very angry because they've been fed a steady diet of outrage and anger, especially on the right, for the last 8 years. And they've lost their connection to reason. Conservatives, quote unquote conservatives, used to be people who used their powers of reasoning, and today they're just as emotional as any Chavista in Venezuela. They are highly excitable and highly emotional about everything, and you can't reason with them. So you have an entire population which has been aroused consistently by the media. They've been heated up by the media over and over and over again, and they've lost the ability to reason. They don't know where to get information. They don't want to look up information and assemble it and examine it so they have a full understanding of the issue. Very few people do that. What they do is they watch Fox News straight for 24 hours all the time, and that serves as their information. Or they watch conspiracy theory videos on YouTube, and that serves as their information. And they have lots of detail based on that stuff. But when it comes to immigration, when it comes to economics, when it comes to military, when it comes to foreign policy, when it comes to trade, they really don't understand the contours of the issue. They don't understand the geography. They don't understand where Iran is in relation to Turkey, or where Iraq is in relation to Syria. They don't understand Southeast Asia. They don't understand China. They don't understand literally the economic issues and the social issues in their own country. Because what they've been doing is watching television or watching YouTube videos or reading the Drudge Report consistently, and they don't even click on the stories. They just look at the headlines, and that serves as their information. Now, that's not everybody, and it's a vast generalization to say that, but I find more often than not that just a casual conversation with somebody reveals a shocking lack of depth of understanding of the history of the United States, politics in the United States in terms of the mechanism of how it works, especially on the right. On the left, it's economics. It's what government is supposed to do. It is political theory. And on the right, it's economics and it's trade and it's immigration and it's this concern and fear of the other, the person that is not me, that isn't my neighbor, and that doesn't look like me primarily. I wouldn't call it racism. I would just say that people are terrified of things that maybe if they knew more about them, they wouldn't be terrified of them, or we would be able to find some solution that worked. But instead, what you get are people who are really, really furious and angry and scared, and they don't want to talk about it. They just want somebody to fix it. Hence, you get Hillary Clinton and you get Donald Trump. Clinton will never tell you what she's going to do. She's absolutely opaque, not transparent. She's the antithesis of transparency. And Donald Trump has no idea what he's going to do. And you don't either. Nobody knows what Donald Trump will do. And my suspicion is that he will probably be a placeholder president if he wins. And there's a good chance that he will win. And that he will run into more trouble from his own party in Congress than he will from the Democrats, and that he will lean to the left because of that, and he will get very little done as president because he's going to spend most of his time filling the airwaves with bombast and trying to get the upper hand by going over the heads of Congress. It might work, but again, nobody really knows what he intends to do or what he, and I don't think he knows. I think he wants to do what's expedient, but expedience is not a recipe for figuring out how much government we need and how the government needs to function and how we need to protect the rights of Americans and so on. Because these are just too complicated for people to figure out. And I think that's the biggest problem we have in this country. I've been telling people over and over again, and I see it all the time. Hey, miss you on the radio. It's really bad. Turn it off. Turn off the television. Turn off the radio. Start reading books. Start with anything that you are interested in. Start with basketball. Start with mechanical stuff. If you like to repair Fords, start working on reading Ford manuals. Start reading the CIA fact book, if that's what it takes. If you like finance, start reading books about finance. Put down the electronic media. Ignore it, turn it off completely, and start reading. And then if you want to watch some kind of news report, well, I just don't think there's anything that I would recommend that you watch. Almost all of the media is what I like to refer to as partisan or what was the word I used? I'm trying to remember it. I'm not editing, so I'm going to have to think out loud. I can't remember what it was. Oh, I know what I called it. Almost all the media is advocacy media, and that includes public television and public radio. In other words, it isn't even biased. It's that everything is advocating a certain point of view, period. And everything is written for that. Everything is written to protect that point of view. Everything is written to promote that point of view. And that includes broadcast, and it includes everything. And most of the time, they don't tell you that it's point of view. You know, the Huffington Post is a point of view media source. The articles in the Huffington Post aren't any more objective than Breitbart, and they're all reporting the same base material, which is an AP story, or an AP story, or a CBS News story, or an ABC News story, or a local newspaper story. And there again, most of it is advocacy media. The only way to figure it out is you have to understand the biases and the leanings, and you have to understand by reading three or four different sources for every single story, if that. And that just takes so much time. You're better off just reading, fiction, even novels. Go read East of Eden. Go read In Cold Blood. Go read, some of the great literature. You're going to get more out of it, because what's going to happen is you're going to start firing your own subconscious and your own imagination, and you're going to start to be able to draw some conclusions about the world that you interface with, whatever that is. So that's what I think about it. I think we're in serious trouble. I think that we're about to make a terrible choice for president, regardless of who wins. Doesn't matter who wins. I think our Congress is run by a bunch of go-along, get-along guys who want to keep their jobs. And I think we're going to stumble along until there is a clarifying event. And I could not predict what that clarifying event is. But people ask me what I think. And if you are a low information voter, go in there and pull the lever for whoever you think you should vote for, because it doesn't make any difference. One will be worse than the other, but another one might be worse than the other one, depending on what things you use to measure. And no one can really predict how it's going to go down. So when people say, well, do you want Hillary Clinton to be president? Or when people say, do you want Donald Trump to be president? I want neither of them to be president. And I want neither of their vice presidential candidates to be president. And I don't want Gary Johnson and William Weld to be president and vice president either. And I don't want Jill Stein. I don't want any of these people. I don't like them. I don't like the leadership in Congress. And I don't like the leadership in the Senate. And I find very few people that I can look at and say that person is someone that I would actually sit and listen to, because I think most of them are trying to keep their jobs and trying to feather their own nests and build their own futures as a career to be on television or to be the guy that announces the vote from the delegation or to be the popular senator that's on the Sunday morning shows and get that fame and fortune that everyone values so much. And that's what I think. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 532, sponsored by Brush Studio in the West End. Remember, if you are planning a corporate event, check out brushstudio.net. They can really make sure that you have a good time and that your corporate event, whatever it is, client appreciation or even some kind of a bonding event for teams within your company, go really well. And it is really great for today's diverse work and client base in today's business. Brushstudio.net in the West End in St. Louis Park, where there's always plenty of parking. And once again, thanks to Hydrus for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Hydrus will power your workouts. I love Hydrus. It makes a huge difference in whatever you do. Yoga, biking, CrossFit. Even if you just walk, try Hydrus. It will keep you hydrated. It will improve your performance, and it'll make you stronger because you can work out stronger. Click on the Hydrus banner for more information, H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Well, yeah, I just got back from the EAA air show, and I'm just doing a quick turnaround and then heading out to Sturgis. But I was at EAA for Alpha Systems, and if you did get a chance to see those guys, you know, I learned a lot out there about the whole situation with AOA, with angle of attack, or lift. And I learned that in general aviation, one of the chief reasons that people crash and are killed is because they lose lift on the final turn to the runway when they're on final approach. So here's the deal. A lot of pilots don't understand this. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It's FAA approved. You have a visual representation of the amount of lift or your angle of attack when you turn on final approach or when you're maneuvering. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the Bob Davis Podcast. One of the things about general aviation is if they could reduce the number of deaths associated with the loss of lift in these final turns, it would make a huge difference. So if you love a pilot, if you are a pilot, it's something to think about. Alpha Systems. And I want to thank everybody that donated to the Bob Davis Podcast while I was on this trip. And I'm going to have to go into my mail real quick and see if I've still got those emails from people that I got brainwave. God dang it. Don't you hate that when you click on your thing and you get, instead of your email, you get like something else, and then you feel like an idiot because you were trying to get email and you got like some other crazy app. Let's see, who do I want to thank? Jack Kelly sent me a donation. Bill Mowry. Who else do I have on this? Sue Salomon. I really, really appreciate your donation. Wayne Nelson and others. Really, really appreciate the donations to the Bob Davis Podcast. It goes to Diesel Fuel, Komodo Dragon Coffee, and Beef Jerky. Keeps me on the road. I'm heading out to Sturgis next, so listen for those podcasts coming up. And thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. Thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, I think I'm at Bob Davis Podcast, and on Instagram, I'm the Bob Davis Podcast, and I love Instagram. And again, thanks for your donations to Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 532. Now you know how I feel. It's not going to change. I'm not happy about it, but I am optimistic about the future. It's just we've got to go through this crucible of this clarifying event, and we're not there yet. So we'll just have to wait and see. Thanks for listening to Podcast 532 from the front yard with the Tiki Churches right by Mobile Podcast Command. Another plane's coming in, so it's time for me to go.